Nellis Air Force Base is about more than fighter aircraft and historical units and exercises. It's made great by the people who are assigned there. During my time at Nellis, two individuals stuck out to me as driving innovative change, joint integration, and tactics development. One was a Raptor pilot at the time, and the other an intelligence officer. Today I'm joined by those two individuals. Colonel Micah Zeus Fessler and Lieutenant Colonel Robin Tabby Bernard join me to talk about their more than two decades of combined experience at Nellis and what they think makes the base so unique and special. This is the Air Minded Podcast, Nellis Season. Welcome back, Air Minded listeners, to my passion project, this Nellis Season of the Air Minded Podcast. As always, I'm your host, the Air Minded Gorilla Tyson Wetzel. This is the second episode of the Nellis Season, and it's designed to build off that overview that I did last week with Lieutenant Colonel Chris Slam Gentry. In this episode, I talked to a couple of what I believe are the Air Force's most talented officers and leaders, Colonel Zeus Fessler and Lieutenant Colonel Tabby Bernard. In their two-plus decades of experience at Nellis, they both graduated and instructed at the U.S. Air Force Weapons School, and they were instrumental in FITGEN tactics and training development. They also worked together at the U.S. Air Force Warfare Center, which encompasses multiple wings, and not only at Nellis, but across the Air Force. And the Warfare Center is something that Slam and I didn't really talk about much last week, so I think this kind of builds on that. At the Warfare Center, Zeus and Tabby drove joint integration and new weapon systems, tactics, and training, and they made the Nellis experience more realistic and valuable and played a major role in improving the joint air tactics training and joint operations that happen at Nellis Air Force Base. I asked them to come on to talk about their experiences and explain how Nellis, and in particular the Warfare Center, contribute to joint air and space training and operations. And I think they nailed it, and I hope you enjoyed the interview as much as I did. A couple of notes before we get going here for real. Zeus called in from the state of Washington, where he was on leave with his family, which I appreciate. But we struggled a little bit with his rural internet connection, so it'll get a little choppy in places. There's at least one rough cut that you'll probably hear. And once I have to do a voiceover to explain something that that you can't really hear from him. Additionally, at one point in a sentence, and it'll be pretty clear, he starts to mention something that sounds like Lafayette, but you don't. It's tough to figure it out. It's the Lafayette Escadrille. That's a squadron of U.S. pilots that flew for France in World War I before the U.S. Joined the conflict. You'll struggle to hear what he says, but when in doubt, just realize it's the Lafayette Escadrille. Additionally, all three of us were guilty of using too many acronyms. Here are a few that I picked out in the editing process. AFSC is Air Force Specialty Code, or the type of job an individual has in the service. GO is General Officer. IP is Instructor Pilot. MDS is Mission Design Series, or the designator, or how we designate aircraft. NAF would be the Numbered Air Force. That is a multiple thousand person organization above the wing level. NTTR is the Nevada Test and Training Range, sometimes known as the Nellis Range. It is the airspace north of Las Vegas, north of Nellis Air Force Base. OTNE is Operational Test and Evaluation. TAT is the Tactics Analysis Team. It's a team that looks at adversary tactics and analyzes them. And then finally, WIC, or the Weapons Instructor Course. That is the weapons school course. That's what they are known as. Each different squadron teaches either one or multiple WICs or courses. Finally, this episode stands alone. You don't need to have heard the intro episode that I did last week, but I do think it will help if you follow, or help to follow along. So I think it's a good idea to check it out. And additionally, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. That way you know when future episodes drop. So without further ado, here's Zeus and Tabby. I'm very excited to be joined by two of my favorite Air Force people today. When I think of the modern era of integration at Nellis, I think of these two as they led operations and intelligence integration at the U.S. Air Force Warfare Center at Nellis while I was there. They're two exceptional officers and leaders. I'm really happy to be joined by first Colonel Micah Zeus Fessler, the commander of the 140th Wing of the Colorado Air National Guard. Zeus has more than 2,000 hours in fighter aircraft, primarily the F-15C and F-22, and now in the F-16. He was a 2003 graduate of the U.S. Air Force Weapons School in the F-15 course, and went back to instruct at the 433rd Weapons Squadron from 2004 to 2009, first as an Eagle instructor and then as part of the initial cadre of the F-22 at the Weapons School. He was then the lead for Chief of Advanced Programs at the Air Force Warfare Center at Nellis, and second, Lieutenant Colonel Robin Tabby Bernard, who gave up command of the 19th Weapons Squadron just a couple of weeks ago, where she led Intelligence U2 and RQ4 students at the Weapons School. She's a 2007 graduate of the Intelligence Weapons Instructor course at the Weapons School, and she came back to instruct from 2008 to 12 before moving to the 422 Test and Evaluation Squadron as the Intelligence Division Chief. During that time, she transitioned to the reserves, and from 18 to 19, she was a director of operations for the 706th Fighter Squadron at Nellis before moving back to the Weapons School as the 19th Weapons Squadron Commander. I've known both for longer than I care to think about. I'm very lucky to have both of you, Zeus and Tabby. Welcome. How are both of you?
Fantastic, Getter. It's I'm going to mess that one up. Sorry, brother.
Don't worry. Getter is just fine. Tabby, fantastic. How are you?
It's great to be here.
Thank you, Zeus. Tabby, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having us on.
All right. Hopefully we can get through this. The three of us, and in particular, you two jokers like to joke around a lot. Just in the intro here, there were some mom jokes that were going around. So hopefully we can try and keep this relatively professional. Tabby, I'm going to start with you since you just had a drink. What do you have for tonight's very special episode?
Very Nellis standard Jack and Diet. When I think of Nellis, I think of Jack Daniels, the second most appropriate drink. Second to Jeremiah Weed, of course.
So I also have some Jack at Jack and Diet. I have my version of it, Gentleman Jack and Coke Zero. I'll tell a very brief story. My love of Jack Daniels actually started at the Weapons School. I actually hated Jack Daniels before I went there as a student in 2007. You may remember our Intel Squadron bar was closed at the time as it was being redone. The bar closest to us was across the way in the A-10 division. Came in and said, "Hey guys, can I have a vodka tonic?" To which I said, "Yeah, sure. Here you go." And handed me a Jack Daniels. So if I was going to have a drink during those 6 months of school, it was going to be a Jack Daniels. And I learned to appreciate it and then love it. So that is my story of why most of these episodes are with the Jack and Diet. Zeus, over to you. What do you have today?
I am drinking a No Lie Brewery here in Spokane, Washington, where I'm on leave right now in the Pacific Northwest. Jet juiced India pale ale. So I figure airplane themed, it kind of made sense.
It does. Yeah. And an IPA, you're really leading the way on that. No small batch IPAs around America these days. All right. So with that said, I gave a little bit of your bio intro, but really looking for your Air Force origin story a little bit. And then in particular time at Nellis. So Zeus, you're still on my screen here on the Zoom. So why don't we start with you?
You know, one older brother also in the Air Force, the two of us growing up both loved fighters and loved combat aviation and fighter aviation, and lucky enough to have parents that would take us around to air shows and help us enjoy that love of fighters and flying. And then I remember distinctly when I was about 8 years old, a Marine Harrier pilot who took a knee and sat there and talked to me for about 45 minutes at an air show. And I think that was the point where I said, that's what I'm going to do. Fortunately, I chose the United States Air Force to join, because I think it's been one heck of a journey, and it's been a blast being in this service with a bunch of great people and with my brother.
All right. Excellent. Tabby, over to you. How about your Air Force and Nellis origin story? Actually, wait, sorry, Zeus, did you want to get into, so that kind of was your Air Force origin story. You want to talk about let's start with how you got to weapons school as your first trip to Nellis, big trip, at least being
Yeah,
assigned.
You bet. I had my first assignment. I was lucky enough to be in the 19th Fighter Squadron, Elmendorf Air Force Base, Alaska. And I had some phenomenal leadership that spent a lot of time pushing me to make me better and to push me towards weapons school, as I loved doing what I was doing. And they took me down there a whole bunch of times, whether it was to go to a patch night, even though I couldn't attend the ceremonies, I would still go to the club and party large. In fact, that was the first time I was grounded flying fighters, was going above 50,000 feet and landing after the third sortie on the third sortie after dark, trying to get to a patch night with my weapons officer co-host Salmon. But I had great people that pushed me there and was lucky enough to get picked up from Elmendorf to go to weapons school at Nellis. And once I landed at Nellis and spent some time there, I think I was hooked. And I tell you, I'd have never left that place if it were my choice.
Speaking of somebody who's never left, we will go over to Tabby. Why don't you give us your Air Force origin story and then how you started your more than decade now, I think, at Nellis.
Yeah, 13 years this month, actually. So I joined the Air Force under like a 1 year ROTC program when the Air Force didn't think they were going to have enough officers. And I was looking for a way to pay for grad school. And they said, do you want to do Intel? And I was like, yeah, sure. That sounds cool. And then I ditched all my other plans as I totally fell in love with the career field and the Air Force. And my first assignment was at Shaw, and I was in the 609th Air Intelligence Squadron at the time. My first trip to Nellis was to do a tactics analysis team in 2004. And that's when I first started to kind of get a sense of what Nellis was all about. And then I deployed, and that's when I met my first weapons officers, Med Stone and Ferris Euler, both Intel graduates. And I was like, these guys are really smart and I like what they do. So then my leadership helped me get over to the 77th Fighter Squadron at Shaw to get some unit level experience. And it was from the 77th that I applied to weapons school and got in and went in 07 Alpha. But I would say it was probably the TAT and a couple of red flag trips in my early couple of years in the Air Force that kind of got me hooked on the base and its mission.
Yeah, same for me. I think for all three of us, one of the thing that kind of unites that experience is getting out there, being pushed by mentors. So in the first one, I talked to my first mentor, Slam Gentry, who pushed me out there. And then when, once you get out there, boy, Nellis gets its claws into you and you just realize this is pretty amazing. And this is something that I want to be a part of. And then Tabby, you did talk about how, you know, deployments, I think that's the one time it's almost acceptable to leave Nellis, right? You go back to the theater and you deploy and you learn what's going on in the war. And then you come back and teach a little bit more and going every few years to kind of rehack that currency is pretty important. And that is something that a lot of Nellis folks actually do. So with that said, we are in the first couple of episodes here of the Nellis season. When Slam and I talked in the overview, one of the main questions I asked Slammer was what makes Nellis special? And Slam thought it was two major things. It was the realism of training and the integration of combat capabilities across airspace and cyberspace domains. And I thought that was a pretty awesome answer. And actually, I kind of rewickered how I was going to do the rest of the season to try and go with those themes because I thought they made a lot of sense. And especially when we talk integration, there's really not two better people that I think of with integration than Tabby and Zeus. So Tabby, since you are on my screen, I will direct the first question to you. What makes Nellis special to you?
So I'll follow Slam's model. I kind of came across two words. And the first you can harass me for because people hate it. It's a buzzword. But it really encapsulates part of what is so intoxicating about what's going on at Nellis to me personally and professionally, and that's innovation. It is the absolute tactical think tank of the Air Force. And not only do you get to just like think about what you could do to be more lethal or more survivable, you then get to go out and experiment and try it out. And it's okay to fail. That's actually when we do some of our best learning, and then we refine it over and over again. And then we write it down and then we teach it. And it's an incredible cradle to grave process of innovation, not just for fighters, as you guys talked about, you know, Nellis is the home of the fighter pilot. I absolutely agree that it's across all NDS, all specialties, joint coalition. So innovation is the word that really stuck out to me for the first reason why I think it's special. And the second is people. There is not another place in the world, I think, where you're going to come across the newest to the most experienced, the most motivated people, highly skilled people. The folks I've had the opportunity to work with across those various missions that you mentioned are some of the best people in the Air Force, and I am proud and honored to have served alongside them. And what's interesting about Nellis is it's like home, you know, people, whether they're stationed there or not, every time they come back, everybody comments the same, that Nellis feels like home. So yeah, Kind of the two things that Nellis means, and I think that's why it's special.
I think it's interesting. Every time I go to the Starbucks at the BX there, I run into somebody that I haven't seen for a while, somebody that I went to school with or been at a flag with or been assigned with, that all roads kind of come back to Nellis at some point. And so it sort of feels a little bit, you know, on the first Friday night of a red flag and you're at the club, it feels a little bit like a family reunion, right? You're seeing a bunch of people you haven't seen for a while. And you just fall right back into the old routine. I did write down tactical think tank. I think that is awesome. I haven't heard it put that way, but that absolutely encapsulates what we do. Zeus, Tabby, put the bar pretty high. What do you think? What do you have to say as to why you think Nellis is special?
You know, it's funny. Those were two words that actually were popping out in my mind as we were talking about that earlier. And Tabby, you absolutely nailed it. You know, I think there's one thing that I would point out, and you can look across the entirety of the Department of Defense and you can look at the tribes within each of the services. You know, I'll give you the Navy, where you've got your subsurface, your surface, and your aviation tribes, right? But the Air Force has tribes of all sorts of different capabilities. You got bombers, you got intel, you got RPA, you've got fighters. You know, you name it. We have all these different people that do things. You have all those people living and working together on a daily basis. And so what it does is it naturally breaks down those tribes. It naturally leads to us finding better ways to do what we do. And I think the most impressive part of that is it's the best of the best. The folks that are there truly are passionate about what they do. They're smart about what they do. And they are curious. Their intellectual curiosity is unbelievable. And it just drives. It drives those things that Tabby was talking about. You have this innovative mindset, this no fear of failure, this willingness to go try something new to make us better as an Air Force. And I'm pretty damn certain that if you looked back and you saw, you know, you went back to the folks of the Lafayette and you brought them forward to today and say, hey, look at this Nellis thing, they would be absolutely amazed by what we're doing and impressed and proud of the legacy that they built.
Yeah. I figured you would both have pretty insightful thoughts on that question, and you did not disappoint. Thank you. I was sitting here writing down a bunch of notes because I think these are great things that I'm going to want to use to talk about over the next couple of months. So,
Gorilla.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I think another piece that comes to mind is that not everybody at Nellis is super experienced, but that doesn't mean that there's not a place for people at Nellis that are new. And I think one of the things I valued that's along this same theme of innovation, integration, and people is an experience, one of my first working with Zeus, in fact, where we were teamed up at the Warfare Center together and he said, hey, we've got this project and we don't have this SME, so I need you to figure out how to build a MALD plan. And I'm like, well, I mean, I barely know what makes up the acronym letter-wise, so that's where I'm starting.
Miniature air launch decoy for our listeners that aren't familiar.
But what's so cool about it is you don't have to be an expert to get involved in the mission and be successful at what Nellis is great at. You just need people who you can work with on a team. And it's like Zeus said, it's not being afraid to fail, because so many of us got put into positions of, hey, create this or build this or do this. And we're kind of looking around the room and like, I've never done that. Were you trained? Nope, me neither. But it's okay, because you figure out what your resources are, you reach out to people, you try and you fail and you try again, and it's okay. And I think that's what's so cool is that you don't have to be an expert to, you know, buy into what's going on at Nellis.
Yeah. And to that point, one of my favorite stories about being a student at the weapons school, I was doing a suppression of enemy air defenses mission, which is a really tough mission. And I'm deep in the books. And one of the instructors, and I can't remember who it was, came in and was like, why are you doing that? Like, the best seed operators in the world are about 100 yards away. Just go down to the Viper vault and go talk to them. Like, bring a beer, like you'll be fine. And that just kind of opened my eyes. Like, yeah, this is the way to go about it. You have the best operators of all the different combat capabilities in this building. Just go talk to them. And especially if you're talking, you know, the fighter guys, they'll be happy to talk to you about their airplane. And I found that to be true. And speaking of which, let's move over to a guy who I'm sure likes to talk about his airplane, Zeus. So Zeus, next question for you. So Slam and I talked a lot of the history and the different capabilities and units at Nellis, but there's some that we focused a little bit more on weapon school and the red flag exercise, a couple of those, but both you and Tabby are part of some of the units that I don't think we spent a ton of time talking about. So I wanted to talk now to both you and Tabby about some of the unique experiences you had and some of the unique units you are part of. First off, what I wanted to talk about is something that is unique to both of you is early development, early tactics development of fifth generation fighter. So Zeus, you were there at the weapon school when the F-22 was brought online in the initial cadre, and eventually we'll get to Tabby and talk about her role in F-35 operational test. So Zeus, if you could, what I've been wanting to ask you about, you know, what life was like at that time when the, as an Eagle instructor, you're told you're going to be an F-22 instructor, you go transition and then start a new course and develop what the tactics are going to be for the operational Raptor fleet. How was that?
Man, it was an unbelievable experience. You know, to have the opportunity to start with a blank sheet of paper, have the support of your leadership chain. And you talked about that in your intro episode of having Geo top cover to go, guys, go figure this out. That's your job. Figure out how we're going to make this work. And getting six of the greatest humans I think I've ever had the opportunity to work with together and going, figure out how to fly an F-22, figure out how to teach flying of an F-22, and build a weapon school syllabus, curriculum, academics, you know, you name it, build the whole thing out. And by the way, we want you to start 6 months earlier than we originally planned. It was an unbelievable honor to be a part of that and be a part of that team. It was pretty fantastic though. I'll tell you, you know, probably the neatest part of it was going out and going back to that fail faster thing. We went out and tried different things, you know, every single day going, hey, will this work? And one of the funniest things was trying to figure out how to fly BFM in an airplane that flew BFM fundamentally differently than we had ever seen.
Sorry for breaking in here, listeners. At this point, Zeus had some Zoom audio issues, and he was just telling a story about a BFM, or basic fighter maneuvers, or dogfighting mission that turned out terribly because the mission or the tactics that they were using were fourth generation tactics that they brought over from their F-15 days. Normally, I'd cut this whole story, this whole anecdote, but knowing this context is really important for the rest of what Zeus's answer is to this question. I think it's important to put that back in, at least try to explain what he's talking about before we go back into the rest of the answer. So with that said, back to Zeus.
And we called that sortie stupid, and we swore to ourselves we would never do that setup again because it was just painful and it didn't actually work. But we did that day in and day out for a year and built a syllabus, making mistakes and figuring out better ways to do things.
Yeah, it must have been. I mean, that is so fundamentally different, flying and fighting a fifth generation fighter than a fourth generation fighter, and learning how to do that through trial and error, and then being able to build a syllabus and teach it to others and then have that percolate throughout the operational force. I'm sure it was a pretty big responsibility that you all felt, but also a pretty awesome experience. So totally makes sense. Tabby, over to you. Played a massive role in F-35 operational test. Whenever we had a question about this new airplane, we always came to you. Definitely had some growing pains early on in the program. What was it like to be in on the ground floor of that program in particular at Nellis as we're trying to figure out, you know, how are we going to get this airplane operational and, you know, what are we going to be able to use it for?
I mean, it was the experience of a lifetime. I think one of the things that I really enjoy is problem solving and not knowing what the answer is. And that's exactly what F-35 OT&E was at the 422. You know, we followed some of what Raptor had laid in terms of foundation, but I think one of the challenges was people were like, oh my gosh, the F-35 is brand new, throw out everything we've ever known and start over. It's like, no, we don't need to do that. You know, we can build off of the lessons that the Raptor community learned, and we can make the airplane even better because while they're both fifth gen fighters, they are different. And so, you know, we had to kind of get over some organizational bias as it relates to what the airplane should and could do. But I think another challenge we had too was the idea of concurrence. We were doing developmental test, operational test, and weapon school syllabus development all at the same time because the Air Force, again, wanted to get this capability online faster. And that was extremely challenging. We were DT was opening the envelope of the airplane days prior to our test sorties, where we're trying to figure out how we execute seed, CAS, and OCA. So it was pretty incredible. I will say it's something when you sit in a room full of black boarders. Sorry for those that are maybe unfamiliar, instructors, not only just graduates, but instructors from the weapons school. So you're sitting in a room full of black border patches and we're like, hey, should we do tactic A or tactic B? And everyone's like, I have no idea. but it was exciting. And it was just really neat to figure out how to employ that airplane.
I can tell you from being on the other side, we were chomping at the bit to get the airplane. I remember when the first couple of weapon school tails showed up and they were still flying with the 422, and we're like, they have our tails. We're going to fly them. We get them for the mission employment exercise. And it was great. Just that first exercise of being able to see a little bit of what the airplane can do. It's, you know, at some point I'm going to do a couple of episodes on the F-35. Just like F-22, if you were talking maybe, you know, 10, 12 years ago, or maybe a little bit longer, certainly some problems. I think the airplane has worked through a lot of those and is a big asset to the Air Force. And it's going to take a little while, just as it took Raptor a little while to change the perception. But I think everybody has come around on Raptor, and F-35, I think, is starting to pay some big dividends for the Air Force.
You know, Getter,
yeah,
throw something out there.
No, yeah, no, 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 no. I brought you on, but I don't want your opinion. Yeah, of course, Colonel Fesler, go ahead.
As always, brother, Tabby made a really, really good point there. And I think we felt that same tension of people telling you this has to be this way, or it has to be a blank sheet of paper, or it has to be, you know, there were a lot of expectations up and down. You know, everybody was willing to give you their expectation or their opinion as to what you should be doing. And it was a huge challenge. I think that was by far the toughest thing, was sorting through what do we keep from the past and what do we move forward on, and how do you find the right pieces and parts of that puzzle to make the airplane as capable as it can be, and the pilot as capable as they can be in that platform, but at the same time, you know, hang on to the things that we've learned that are really good. You know, you want to move forward, but you realize that there's a reason why we have, you know, decades and decades of great history, which you talked about a lot already in doing this business, and it really did help us sort it out. But by far, that was one of the toughest challenges, and I think Tabby did a great job of communicating that.
Well, thank you, Zeus. I appreciate it. I think, you know, the F-35 additional challenge was we had to do Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps tactics development, like jointly, all the time, together. And while we all have air power components within our services, we think about air power differently. And so we struggled, I think, in the early days, figuring out how we wanted to communicate the capabilities and the tactical choices available to a pilot when employing. But I think you're right, Gorilla. We've come along, airplane and the communities, in a great place. So.
Yeah. And I do also think, bringing it back to Nellis, I mean, you talked about the joint tactics development. That's not happening at UMA or Fallon. That's happening only at Nellis, right? Nellis provides, the phrase that I used a little bit cheesy last time was the NTTR being the canvas, right? You have the ability, you've got the threats out there. You've also got all the other platforms. I remember with F-22, we're talking fourth and fifth gen fighter integration. Where else are you going to do it better than at Nellis? So Nellis provides that canvas that allows that tactics development, that ability to fail faster, to get lots of sorties, to try things out. And so that is why I think this type of tactics development that you both are talking about with two different fifth gen platforms could not happen the same way anywhere else. And I think Nellis was really important to the development of both of those programs. Transitioning just a little bit, as I kind of already mentioned, Slam and I talked about realism and integration. We talked about some of the units. One of the units, and somebody's already hit me up and that I didn't talk about the Warfare Center. So, and the Warfare Center is the biggest organization on the base. It's a two-star level command, a numbered Air Force that is in charge of, I think, 7 or 9 wings, something like that, in the 57th wing, which is a lot of what we talked about, is just one of those wings. So the Warfare Center covers a lot, and it provides a lot of capability to the Air Force and truly the Joint Force and the Coalition Force for that matter. And it's something that I will admit I did not cover a whole lot, but I have two Warfare Center alums. So I thought that would be a great opportunity for me to cover my mistake. As I mentioned, the first one, you know, I'm going to bring guests on to correct us to 100%. So Tabby, I've got you on my screen right now. Why don't we start with you? What does the Warfare Center do? Why is it important? What does it provide to the Air Force?
So, you know, Gorilla, as you mentioned, it's the NAF equivalent, and it's responsible for directing 57th Wing, 53rd Wing, 505th, the NTTR, formerly 98th Range Wing. So, I mean, it is really kind of the geo top level coverage that you guys talked about in the first episode that enables all of that enterprise to do the mission that we are all so passionate about. And then for my experience specifically, I was working with Zeus in the special programs office, really trying to push the envelope as it relates to integration, specifically with joint partners, and reaching out to our combatant commands and figuring out where we could fill gaps, solve problems, and basically, you know, make all of those individual combatant commands more lethal by using all of that brain power that's resident at Nellis.
Zeus, over to you. What makes the Warfare Center important?
You know, you both have hit a lot of great points, but I think there are four things that really are key. It's vision, vector, resources, and top cover. And I say that because the vision makes all these rock stars think, right? They're already thinkers as it is, but you're trying to give them a place to go to, right? Because run herd on the cats will run herd on you. And when you have a base that's filled with a bunch of weapons officers, they're going to start going all their different directions. So that vision, I think, is really important. And you've seen that over time. It does trickle down into the weapons school and into the aggressors and into the 422. Those things come out. That vector is when we have to make a choice, right? A lot of times we get to this point where we can go, I can choose path A or I can choose path B. And that's the senior leadership that gives you that vector. The resources are absolutely critical because none of the things that we did at Nellis could be done without somebody fighting to make sure that we have the resources to do that, whether that's adversaries, whether that's information warfare resources, whatever it might be, there are a ton of resources that we need to gather to be able to do the things that we do at Nellis. And then last but not least is top cover. And I'll tell you, that part cannot be understated. You know, the last Warfare Center commander there, Major General Corcoran, he's been a guy that's been given top cover to warriors his entire career. When Tabby and I were working in the Warfare Center, it was Major General Hyatt, who actually at one point in time said, hey, you are way outside of your lane, but it's the right thing to do. So don't worry about it. Just keep going. And having people in leadership that are willing to give you that level of top cover advocacy resources, you know, that makes your job more doable every day.
Nailed it. And especially out at Nellis, where we do push the bounds of what has been approved. A lot of authority is delegated down to relatively junior personnel. You need that top cover, and that seems ingrained. And I've read about a lot of different eras. I think that really started in the 70s when those vets that were coming back from Vietnam were running 100 miles an hour, and they were starting new programs and had new ideas, things like the aggressors and constant peg and red flag. And that doesn't go anywhere if the what was known as the Tactical Warfare Center commander at the time wasn't pushing it to his boss, which was the Tactical Air Command, the predecessor to Air Combat Command, if that commander was not pushing. And so I think sometimes we forget that this couldn't really happen if you didn't have that top cover. Maybe it's a little bit of play in the bureaucracy, maybe a little bit of politics, but it is the game, right? And we need that. And I think the Air Force is pretty good about who they put into that job to ensure that that person is staying at the kind of knife edge, if you will, and protecting those individuals that are still running 100 miles an hour. So I think that's super important and great prep on that question. Thank you, Zeus. Vision, vector, resources, and top cover. I wrote it down and everything. Man, you guys are giving me all kinds of stuff. Go ahead.
I think the other thing that both Zeus and I benefited from was empowerment. General Major General Hyatt was also Colonel Hyatt, who pushed me to weapon school in 2007. So he and I had worked together several times in the past. But what I appreciated from the Warfare Center commander is the trust that he placed in us as his staff. And we were majors, captains. I think Zeus eventually promoted to lieutenant colonel. But he just let us run, and we were able to make decisions and execute the mission. And we didn't have to ask for permission. We just did what we knew we needed to execute. We got corrected if we needed to, but that was rare. Honestly, we were just told, hey, keep working. You guys are doing great things. And, you know, here's the new problem I want you to solve. And so I think that empowerment from the senior leader is really critical from the Warfare Center level.
And I feel Abby, like, go ahead, Zeus.
If my camera were on, you would have seen me fist pumping and dancing back here when you were talking about empowerment. I don't have the bandwidth. Sorry.
What I was going to say is, I feel like that kind of mentality has been codified at the chief of staff level over the last year or so with General Brown's accelerate, change, or lose. He is saying from on high, if you will, that we are going to move fast and we're going to do things fast. And that may cause some errors along the way, but he is willing to accept that because what we're doing right now is not good enough to win in the future. And he wants to move quickly. Not surprisingly, those of us who got the opportunity to work for him, that is not a surprise. He's a former commandant of the weapons school. Nellis is just bred into his DNA, it feels like to me. I think the feeling that I get from Nellis and that empowerment is, I think, what he is trying to give from the top level. So that's a whole nother thing. That's the ultimate ungettable get is get General Brown on here. But anyways, love the discussion on empowerment. Now, I wanted to talk to each of you about a couple of the unique things that you guys did at Nellis. So, Tabby, you just gave up command. We're both kind of in this. We get to breathe a little bit because we are no longer in command. A really unique command that you had there in the 19th during your watch. It went from just the enlisted and officer intelligence courses to also the high altitude with the addition of RQ4 and U2. That's a lot on your plate and a lot of responsibility to the Air Force in the development of intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance for the U.S. Air Force and really the Joint Force. So I guess, you know, without too much of a softball, you know, what was that command like? What were your biggest challenges or maybe not only your biggest challenge, the things that you're most proud of the 2 years of just giving up command?
Yeah. It was absolutely the job of a lifetime. And as you alluded to earlier, I had transitioned to the reserves in 2012. And so I never really thought that opportunity would be available to me. But it's really a huge thanks to Lieutenant General Jameson for opening up squadron commander boards to find to reservists and guardsmen so that all three components, active duty, guard, and reserve, could board for jobs and allow the leadership to pick people for the right job. So I'm just immensely honored to have been given that opportunity to lead that squadron.
Before you go on, our last guest, Slam Gentry, got the opportunity to lead as a guardsman, got to lead an active duty squadron as well, the 45th Intelligence Squadron. So sorry, back over to you, Tabby. Didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's awesome. I started that job just feeling incredibly humbled and honored to even be there. I love the weapons school. As you know, it was hard for me to ever want to leave Nellis, and I just kept getting offered jobs to stay and keep doing what I was passionate about. And the 19th Weapons Squadron is one of those jobs. I think, you know, one of the challenges that I hadn't really thought about was a global pandemic. about 8 months into my command and yours as well, all of a sudden it's like, hey, don't touch a surface that somebody else touched because you might get the virus. We had so many unknowns in the beginning about how it all worked. We had students. There's no such thing as social distancing in a mission planning cell. You know, so how do you execute that high level training and build weapons officers the way that we've done for so many decades while social distancing and limiting people in rooms. Of course, we have terrible ventilation in all our vaults, so like that doesn't help. We, you know, the weapons school never shut down. We, at the 19th, took a knee for about a day and a half to kind of assess the situation, and then we just kept on going. And we were really cautious. We followed all of the mitigation criteria, and we graduated weapons officers without skipping a beat. And so that's one of the challenges I hadn't really thought about, but one that the cadre and the students really just kind of worked through, and we did it class after class. So I'm really proud of that. And then, as you talked about, we had a 400% mission increase during my time as the commander, bringing on U2 and RQ4 pilots, as well as the second full class of the enlisted advanced Intel instructor course, which was a full 108-day training program, just like the officer course for Intel. And I think one of the things I'm most proud of that we accomplished is not only building, validating two syllabi for U2 and RQ4, but really changing the culture and shaping where we want Air Force ISR to go. And rather than kind of staying in tribes of, hey, I'm this tribe, so I'm the best at ISR, or I'm this tribe, so I'm the best, let's be a team and realize the competencies that we all bring, and how much better are we if there's more of us, first of all, and just really trying to spread that weapons officer goodness into more communities. Because frankly, as a weapons officer, if someone comes to you and says, I want to be better, how could you say no to that? And what an amazing opportunity to be a part of helping two communities move forward from a tactical expertise perspective.
Yeah. So it's that build, teach, and lead mentality of the weapons school. I also think the weapons school has a responsibility to the greater combat air forces, which is we're going to take your best men and women for 6 months, and we're going to train the hell out of them, but they're going to come back and they're going to be better, and they're going to raise the game of everybody, right? They're going to raise the floor of everybody and really raise the ceiling of a few folks. And I think that's incredibly important. And I think that even though it's a relatively small squadron, I think the impact that you had on Air Force ISR and thus joint ISR, truly a big impact on what you guys were doing and what you guys were pushing. So I think that if you don't feel proud of that, know that we saw it, and I hope that you feel proud about that as well. So over to you, Zeus. So kind of the same mentality, I think, is even more pronounced in the Eagle and the Raptor community, which is, you know, as the 433rd goes, so goes those communities. The Raptor and Eagle pilots really drive tactical employment of those two platforms. And, you know, we had SLAM, and you said you listened to the SLAM episode as a primer for this episode. So he talked about a 24-minute BFM mission taking a 7-hour debrief and over a 14-hour day. And I was like, yeah, 14 hours? Yeah, not particularly long. That was your course. That's what you went through. So first off, any comments on SLAM story that bring back any good memories, any bad memories? And then the bigger question, though, is really, you know, what kind of responsibility, or how'd you feel as an instructor there, knowing that what you were doing was producing the weapons officers that were going to make change and drive tactical employment of those platforms throughout the Air Force? It's a lot of questions there in one. Sorry.
No, it's all good. I can unpack those. No, it's fantastic. So, you know, I will tell you that every one of the memories I have from the 433rd, I cherish. I mean, it's funny. I think about the fact that I remember one day where I started with a hack, you know, at 6 a.m. and we finished at 5 a.m. the following day. But you just didn't think twice about it, because you were so dedicated to what you were doing. You were so dedicated to the learning. You knew the WUGs were struggling. Everybody was tired, you know, but at the same time, you're like, well, there's no other time in your life where you get 6 months to do nothing but focus on getting better. And the people that are teaching you will give whatever time they have. It doesn't matter. It could have gone 48 hours. I'll tell you what, it could have probably gone for an entire week. And I guarantee you, hold me up. I still got to keep talking. They would have kept teaching that entire time. And it's truly the gift that is the weapons school, is working with a bunch of people who will drop anything to teach. And I think Tabby said it really well a minute ago when she was talking about, you know, somebody asking, you know, how can I be better or help me be better? And could you ever say no to that? And so the 14 hour day, you know, that's nothing. That's, you know, that's chump change. And that's actually, that's, those are the good times. Those are the great times, is having that opportunity to interact with somebody and really break down every single piece and part of a tactical sortie to understand it for what it really is, to get to the bare facts and to figure out how we do it better next time. And that was just absolutely unbelievable. I lost question two, Getter.
Question two is the importance of, right now we're talking the 433rd, but, the importance that squadron has in driving tactics development and the way that the F-15 and the F-22 operate. It's, you know, as the weapon school goes, that's how those platforms and a lot of other platforms as well, but really focused on what you guys did in the 433rd, you drive the way the rest of the Eagle and the Raptor community employ. You know, what does that responsibility feel like? Do you realize that what you're training and what you're putting out is going to be the individuals that are leading folks to war, you know, in months or even weeks after they leave the weapons school? You know, seems like an awesome responsibility.
It definitely is, you know, and that it's actually an awesome responsibility, but it's also a great adventure. You know, that at the same time, everybody in that organization is thinking the same way, going, hey, we have a pretty small air dominance community. You know, the Eagle community was not a massive community. The Raptor community is not a massive community. And we have the gift of being able to standardize those communities or get them to all operate the same way, which actually works really well. It's amazing to be able to show up and fly with any other unit and you all fly the exact same way. Everybody has, you know, similar tactics. They have similar comm. Everything is so standardized that it's very easy to operate together. And you know, to get to that point, we would spend hours upon hours on end talking before we ever changed anything. The entire cadre of IPs for both Raptor and Eagle would sit down and we would argue for hours about what are the implications? What will this do to air dominance? You know, what does this do to teaching a lieutenant? What does this do to teaching a colonel? How do you handle all the different facets of this thing? And those discussions, I don't think any very lightly, you know, because we knew how important that was. It's an awesome responsibility, but it's also a gift at the exact same time to realize that the things that you get to do every day, the person that you're teaching tomorrow is going to be the one that takes the young guys across the fence, takes them downtown, gets the job done and brings them all home at the end of the day. I mean, holy cow, how can you be more motivated by anything but that, right? There's nothing more pure than that when it comes to what we do on a day in, day out basis.
Yeah, man, nailed it. And, kind of the way you're talking made me think a little bit about, again, my favorite era, the post-Vietnam era. I think what you're talking about and some of the feeling that you get at the 433rd and truly all the squadrons of the weapon school, at least to me, traces lineage back to the F4 division post-Vietnam. And you had guys like Jumper and Keys and Myers that were figuring out how are we going to make the F4 community better? And they did. And they found ways to get the word out. They wrote articles. They, you know, played a major, major role in advancing the tactics and training of an Air Force. And that lineage has never really gone away. That is core to what the squadrons at the weapons school do. And there's a lot of different ways that happens. It's not just the weapons officers that goes out there. It's through Red Flag. It's through other exercises that happen out at Nellis. So, all right. Yeah, go ahead.
So, you know, we've talked a lot about what makes Nellis so special. And I think I've sat in some of those conversations that Zeus is alluding to when air dominance is like, should we change this or should we not? And one of the things that's so great about Nellis is it's not just the 433rd. It's not just the weapons school. It's the weapons school and test. And so What's really exciting is, you know, we sat in a room with the folks who are developing tactics, the folks who are refining tactics, the folks who are teaching those tactics. And to have all of those people in the same physical space to have those conversations, there is really nothing that can match that. VTCs are nice, but it is not the same. And so I think one of the incredible things about Nellis is having OT and the WIC co-located, because we did that with Raptor, we did it with F-35, and I know other communities are doing it as well. And I think that's one of the really special things about Nellis.
Yeah, you come back and you write the tactics manuals and all that kind of stuff. So we've mentioned it that both of you represent Total Force. Zeus is in the Guard. Tabby, you're a reservist. I think, and actually all of my guests for this season, Slam is also a Guard member. I didn't plan it that way, but I do think that that says something about Nellis, is that it is not just an active duty base. It's truly a Total Force base. And when I think of both of you, I think of you as subject matter experts in large part because you were there forever. But I think that's really important about the reserve component. So a question to either of you or both of you, you know, what is the Guard and Reserve? You know, why is that important at Nellis, and how does that kind of work? And Tabby, you're on my screen, so I'm going to go to you first.
So I think what the Guard and Reserve provide is exactly what you said, which is continuity of personnel. And it's not just in operational tests. It's in the weapons school. It's in the aggressors. Some of the longest standing MiG-1s are Reserve 06s who have been there for 17 years. And those guys are still just slaying at Red Flag and punishing blue mistakes. And so I think what was really awesome about being a Total Force member for F-35 OT&E was that my tour wasn't just 2 years, which is kind of standard, maybe three as an officer in the Air Force. I got to be at the 422 for 6 years, which allowed me, I feel like, the opportunity to see things through. And, you know, I felt like I left a lot undone, handed off a lot to the next generation of folks. But I think one of the great things is just having people that can stay in the same place and develop that expertise, whether it be in the platform or just in where have we been, where are we going, where should we go, to help us, you know, not repeat mistakes every 2 years as we have new folks kind of switching out on the active duty side.
Absolutely. Zeus, anything to add?
Yeah, you know, I think that continuity piece you put in there is great, but I would tell you that you have the learning environment at Nellis is so incredible that the longer you're there, the more you can gather and the more you can return on that investment. And I really look at my education and the opportunities in the Air Force as people invested in me, and dear God, please let me give them some return on that investment. And the standing up of the Raptor WIC after that was learning how to have intellectual curiosity and work your way through challenging problems. And then I was lucky enough to be paired up with Tabby trying to tackle our nation's, you know, challenges after that. And that intellectual curiosity, that ability to debrief, that ability to work through things, teach, all those pieces kind of came together, you know, at the end of that. And I think you can really harvest the opportunities that exist at Nellis the longer that you're there. You know, 6 months is a gift. 2.5 years coming back teaching after that is even more so a gift. Somehow I got lucky enough to get 7.5 years at Nellis. And I will tell you that there's not a day that goes by that I'm not making a decision that doesn't somehow link back to something that I learned while I was there. Now, you could probably just say that's because I'm an incredibly slow learner and most of the rest of the people do that stuff in 2.5 years. But I was really lucky to work with amazing people who taught me a million different things. And those things are flying through my brain every day and bringing a smile to my face every day.
Well, you kind of asked, so I we're getting close to the time that I want to let you go. So I had one question individually and then one combined question for both of you. And Zeus, my question for you was going to be something that you sort of just answered right there when you said there's not a day that goes by that Nellis or something that happened in your time there didn't impact what you do. You're now the wing commander of an incredibly diverse wing that does a lot of different missions, whether it's the F-16 that you fly or the space mission. There's just a lot going on. What I'm wondering is what is it? Is anything about Nellis or your time there affect the way that you command on a day-to-day basis?
Oh yeah. I think that, you know, Tabby alluded to being empowered and to having top cover and the impact that that had. And I will tell you, you know, as a wing commander, I feel like I've never had a job. Probably the only close one would be that warfare center job that Tabby and I worked together, where you just have free reign to go do things. And then when you combine General Goldfein's and General Brown's message, you know, General Goldfein going, if something's dumb, don't do it, submit a waiver and don't wait for a response. if I had a nickel for every waiver I've submitted as a wing commander because we're trying to stop doing dumb things, I would have one shitload of nickels, right? And so that mentality that I think was really born working in the warfare center, you know, was probably bred into me in the 433rd, but really came to fruition in the warfare center of go solve problems, go faster, don't be afraid of failure, has been very, very effective at, in helping me navigate a pandemic as a wing commander and mission changes and Air Force perspective changes. I mean, we're going from 20 years of counterinsurgency into peer competition in a rapid clip. And you got to be willing to take risks. You got to be willing to go run with scissors. And I will tell you that I think Nellis gave me the gift of running with scissors. Standing that when your boss tells you you're cleared to run with scissors, they mean it. Go. And so, yeah, massive impact on my life. I mean, one of the greatest experiences by far.
Tabby, one job that you have that I actually only had it for a year, so I didn't get a whole lot of time to talk to you about it. DO of a fighter squadron as an intelligence officer, first heard for me, absolutely phenomenal. You were the DO of the 706th fighter squadron there at Nellis. How was that? I think since you knew a lot of the folks that flew there, it, you know, maybe you were in a unique position, but how was it to be the intel director of operations for a flying unit? That's crazy.
It was crazy. My records do not reflect that job because as a 14N, I'm not authorized to get credit for that position.
Oh, did I let the cat out of the bag? Okay.
No, I'm just joking. I think what's great about Nellis is it is not about who you are and what your background is. It's about what can you do. And I just think, you know, being the DO of that squadron was a really challenging experience, but one that my, you know, history at Nellis kind of prepared me for. I knew a lot about aviation. I know a lot about that stuff. I know when Zeus and I worked together at one point, I was trying to build an airspace plan and he's like, did you file the paperwork with the FAA for the ALTRAP? And I'm like, oh my gosh. I know what the FAA is, but no. I think what I learned at Nellis was that you don't have to know everything. If you know the right people and you know how to lead people, that's really what being a DO or a commander is all about. And so, you know, I wasn't trying to be a pilot. I was just trying to effectively lead people and enable them to do their jobs as effectively as possible. And I had a great time and I hope the squadron had a good time with me as the DO, but it was definitely cool to also break some barriers, you know, and change people's perceptions of what a 14N can do, of what a woman can do. Cause I have to kind of throw that in there too, that I was the first female in any leadership position in the 706th and only the third female commander in the 19th Weapons Squadron. So it's been really cool to have an opportunity to kind of break some perceived barriers, both from a gender and an AFSC perspective.
Awesome. All right. My last question will be a big one and you can unpack it and answer as you see fit. So as I was looking at your guys' bios and trying to figure it out, you have more than 20 years combined at Nellis among all of us, a quarter of a century. That's crazy. I laid out what I think is important in episode one. Is there anything that you think that I need to be focused on or maybe that I've missed? And then just anything else that you'd like to add before we log off of the Zoom here, we end this episode of, you know, Nellis being important, Nellis, why this was special or anything else that that pops to mind. So we heard from you, Tabby, last. So I'll give you the last word and Zeus over to you.
You know, I think the things that you outlined in your overview, in your intro to Nellis for this this series of podcasts was fantastic. The one thing that did pop into my mind was the Nellis O Club and the cast of characters that live there. And I know that sounds silly, but at some point it probably deserves it. Whether you walk over and see, you know, God rest him his soul, but, you know, Goldie Goldfein in his seat over there in the corner, or LD Johnson, you know, Bashful Rap, you know, they're just all these characters, Browse Holden, you know, again, rest in peace, Browse. You know, there are all these characters that were always there at the Nellis O Club, and they've been there since the 70s. So those guys that you were talking about earlier that went on to become four-star generals, they were amazing. And we are so grateful. I mean, if I've seen farther, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. I've always loved that quote. But in this case, you know, you have a cast of characters that never left Nellis, and they were as passionate as those ones that went on to be four stars. And if I had a nickel for every conversation that I had where I learned something from those guys at the Nellis O Club, man, again, I'd have
let me guess nickels. A shit more nickels. Yeah. Yeah, I think I would have to put the little explicit lyrics on a Nellis O Club episode.
Did I just ruin that for you?
No. But yeah, that's interesting. It's something I certainly didn't think about. Nellis O Club is unique, especially in the continental U.S. There's not a whole lot of clubs that are even left anymore, and none of them really mean anything. But the Nellis O Club is about a hell of a lot more than crud and drinking, although there's a little bit of both of those, especially on a Friday night of Red Flag. But the conversations that happen out back, the conversations that happen on a Friday, the first Friday of Red Flag, the people that you meet, the relationships that you that continue to build at the Nellis O Club is pretty special. That is a pretty unique place. The Thursday of patch night of every class, there's not many places in the world I'd rather be than the Nellis Officers Club. So, and I'm getting a head nod from Tabby, and I'm guessing that I would be getting that from Zeus if I was able to see you as well. So yeah, good point. Wow. Nellis O Club. Didn't think about that. Tabby, over to you. What do you have to say for the last word?
Well, I think you've got some great episodes coming up in terms of mission. So I'm really excited to hear as you explore Red Flag, the Aggressors, the 547th, the Thunderbirds. There's just so many cool things to talk about. I think kind of going back to why I think Nellis is special, I just wanted to say one last comment about the people. The things that we've achieved at Nellis over the years are not due to the individuals, Zeus or Tabby or Gorilla. It's every single cadre member at the weapons school. It's all the bros at test. It is the absolute passion that each of those people come to work with every day that makes Nellis so great. It's what's enabled our advancements in tactics, in techniques, in instructorship. So it's just really an honor to be able to stay here and keep doing something that I'm so passionate about with such amazing people. And I think I don't know how to do more just Nellis the people, but that is truly what I think makes this place so great. So,
well, we will hear from more Nellis people. I really agree with you, though. Even a couple of these interviews don't really cover the totality of the people that are there. It's a pretty special group. Especially with some of the organizations that we're going to be talking about, whether it's officer, whether it's enlisted, whether it's air crew or not. The people out at Nellis, for the most part, just some of the best men and women in the United States Air Force. Pretty awesome. Thank you both. It's pretty late out here in Maryland for me, so we're going to end it here. I really appreciate both of you coming on. It's kind of exactly what I anticipated. Some laughs between the three of us since we all know each other pretty well. And it's been a lot of fun. So with that, Zeus and Tabby, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun. Well, that does it for this episode. I had an absolute blast talking to Zeus and Tabby, and I hope you enjoyed the interview. They're just so passionate about Nellis, about the mission, and maybe more importantly, about the people there that make it happen. And I had high expectations for this conversation when we put it on the calendar, but I was they surpassed even what I expected, even the high bar that I put out there. So I really appreciate Zeus and Tabby coming on. I hope you enjoyed it as well. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to help me out, be sure to leave a 5-star review. I'd love to hear from you. I've been getting a lot of feedback on this season already. I appreciate it. You can email me at airmindedpodcast@gmail.com or interact with me on social media. I'm at airmindedpod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And a reminder, the views expressed on this podcast are mine alone and do not reflect the official policy or position of the United States Air Force, the Department of Defense, or the United States government. This is the Air-Minded Gorilla, Tyson Wetzel, signing off and saying thanks for joining me.